Blog Talk Radio.
This is going to be very interesting. Very, very interesting. I don't know a good thing, but it's going to work. Radio, Real Sports Talk Radio, Randy Zelia here, Jose Padilla. Right now we're getting ready to be joined by Peter Vesey from the New York Post. Peter is the NBA guru, one of the best in the business. Let's welcome in right now. Peter, how are you today?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
I got to correct you right away, though. I'm not with the Post anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry. The contact I still had from you was for the Post, but Peter, it's a pleasure to have you on with us. And I got to tell you, this NBA offseason I think has been one of the most intriguing ones not because of the major moves, but because of the minor moves. I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Well, be specific, and I'll be glad to comment on it.
Well, let me put it this way: I just released the Back Sports page just released their preseason poll in the Eastern. We actually listed the Boston Celtics as the number one team in the Eastern Conference over Miami because of all the moves that they've made.
Boy, I don't know about that. I mean, I think Ainge has done a real good job of revamping the team, but to put them ahead of the Heat after they won the title would not in my book, not in the long shot, no. They still have older guys that, you really got to worry about injuries with Pierce and Garnett had a great season, when he went to center. But playing a whole season there and the minutes you got to worry about. And, they didn't really come up with anybody, any big guys. They came up with a lot of shooters, a lot of scorers. Got Green back. But... Not that the Heat have a center, but they want it without a center. So, and I see Bosch is already saying that he'll reconsider playing center, and that might be the best for the team.
You know, it's funny though. You know, we had the same conversation in the little boardroom about the bigs with the Celtics. I think Sullinger and Melo being in practice with Garnett every single day is going to make them better. That was just, this is how I generally feel about it. Miami, I felt, took advantage of a very good matchup with Oklahoma City and was able to do, I don't want to basketball, it's hard to do anything with smoke and mirrors, but I think their weaknesses weren't really shown too much during the finals.
Well, I think they were. They played against a team that had it going at every position. And, they were able to shut
Blog
them down at certain spots. I mean, Harden...
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time. You are now...
I'm sorry about that.
Are your bills piling up? Filing bank.
Sorry about that, Peter, but all of a sudden my board just blew up. It was amazing.
Well, my ear blew up.
I'm sorry about that. Yeah,
but
yeah.
Anyway, the Heat was able to take advantage of a lot of weaknesses that Oklahoma City, nobody else was able to take advantage of. They were able to exploit the fact that, their center really couldn't score, and they were able to zero in on.
Notified that there is a caller in queue. Otherwise...
Well, I agree with you on that. Yeah, I agree with you on that. Their center wasn't able to score. Oklahoma City had nothing. They had nothing going with Perkins and nothing happening there with Ibaka. And not even, I felt like Durant was such a target for Miami's defense that it was, I don't want to say it was almost sort of like one-sided, but it felt like Westbrook, you just weren't sure put on Durant's shoulders.
Westbrook tried to do it all, and he's that good that he probably can do it all against most teams. But when he's trying to do it all, you know, Durant isn't getting as many touches, as many shots as you like to see. And again, Harden was the key. They just totally made him do everything with his right hand, and he couldn't do it. He was not able to adjust. Now he's asking for a max contract. I love Harden, but he definitely was exposed in that series, and the Heat was able to do it, you know, without a center. So again, they don't have a center. They got a bunch of pretenders, but they've improved. You know, Wade, you say, you know, you're looking at Boston improving, but the Heat has to improve with the fact that Wade is now going to be healthy. He had his surgeries, and he's worked on his outside shot even more, and or maybe he's looking to take the mid-range shot even more. But very tough to rate anybody ahead of Heat at this point.
Okay, I understand. I also put a lot of stock on the Indiana Pacers of the year they had last year, and I think the addition of DJ Augustine is going to help them have yet another solid point guard and give them the opportunity of putting George Hill at the two and having DJ run the point.
You know, I'm an Augustine fan, but you know, he's been injured, and he's had some long droughts in his career offensively. You know, I don't think you can count on him. You know, as of yet, you know, Collison was definitely a plus for that team. Now he's gone, so you know, for the Hornets. For the Bobcats to give up on DJ, not even offer him a contract, you got to feel this. You got to be worried about that. But I agree with you that the Pacers are on the way up. They've been on the way up for 2 years. They continue to be on the way up. They brought back everybody they needed to bring back. They, you know, re-signed everybody, and you know, and Hibbert and Hill, and so you know, I think they're improved, and I think that it's kind of ironic that, you know, Bird is out of there after rebuilding the team in his image. You know, it took some heat in the beginning and took some real grief for not turning it around. And then he did turn around. Now he's gone, and Donnie Walsh is back. So that's kind of a weird thing.
Out of the three teams in this area, and I consider Philly in this area, which team, the Nets, the Knicks, and the Sixers, had the best offseason?
Well, I mean, the Nets, I mean, they just, you know, brought in some, re-signed, you know, Darren Williams, and, you know, brought in Johnson. I mean, they had a great off season, and they've you know, signed a whole bunch of role players that are going to help this team, you know, and of course, you know, Philly made the big move by getting Bynum, but getting rid of Iguodala, so. You know, everyone says they got their franchise player. I don't see Bynum as a franchise player until he proves he's a franchise player and he proves he can be, you know, go through another season without being injured. He's already gone overseas and had that Kobe treatment on his knees. So I don't know. I mean, to me, he's a big question mark physically, mentally, emotionally. Yeah, he's got talent, but the kid is a little weird, and he's proved that time and time again. Maybe Philly has already taken care of him by giving him a handicapped parking spot that he can, you know, could get in there without getting ticketed and getting the bad press. But he's a strange kid, and if that's their franchise player, good luck. You know, and the Knicks, of course, you know, they've got basically the same team without Lynn. Felton back. You know, we could talk about, you know, whether they made the right move, you know, whether money money was the reason they decided not to bring Lynn back, or was it really that the owner was angry that he went and got an increased offer. It really doesn't matter anymore. Felton played well with Amari when he was there. He had a terrible season last year with Portland. He came in overweight. But you know what? He comes in every year overweight. That's what he's been doing. I mean, they were angry at him in Charlotte for the same thing. And, you know, it really haunted him in Portland. So my point with him is he's got a lot to prove. He's got to be coming back very angry at himself and also angry at the Knicks for, you know, including him in that trade. So he should be at the top of his game this year, and that's the key, because kid as good as he is in spurts, you know, the guy's almost 40 years old, so, and you know, I don't know how much they can count on him in the long run.
It's funny, Peter, because I jokingly said that I'm on opening night at the Garden, I'm waiting for a DeLorean to come out with Kurt Thomas, Marcus Camby, and Jason Kidd coming out, hoping they have their game from 1997. Because
that's funny.
It's just one of those.
Yeah, I like
it. It's just one of those things. At this point, you know, I think I thought the Jeremy Lin situation. I thought Jeremy Lin, like Raymond Felton when he was with the Knicks, they played the best because they were in that run-and-gun D'Antoni system. And,
right.
And Amari, you know, one of the reasons why, and people have not really brought this part of it up, Amari struggles with Carmelo on the court because Amari was a product of D'Antoni's system for his whole career out in Phoenix. So now
right.
You have to start playing a half-court offense, which he wasn't used to doing in Phoenix, now in New York under Mike Woodson. And there's a struggle
right.
because it's the point guard getting Stoudemire the ball. Now the ball's in Anthony's hands for a good portion. Amari just seems like he's really lost right here.
Well, look, if the ball is going to be in Amari in Melo's hands for any great time during the shot clock, then we're going to see the same team as see the same results as last year. The Knicks are going nowhere worthwhile. Point guard's got to handle it. If you don't have faith in him and Kidd, I mean, what? When the kid's on the court, you're telling me Melo is going to have the ball? Come on. I mean, it's not going to happen. If it does happen, Woodson's not going to have a job for too long either. So I don't foresee that. I agree with you as far as, you know, D'Antoni and Amari and all that stuff. But there were so many other factors involved, you know, bringing in a scorer after the guy was the man. You know, a lot of emotional stuff there. You know, a lot of ego stuff there, and they can swear they're, you know, they're on the same page. And but let's do it on the court. Let's see the ball move. Let's see the bodies move. And you know, and then they should be a pretty decent team.
Who do you think was the winners of the offseason? If you had to name three teams, who were the winners?
Not too good at this off the top of my head, but the Lakers certainly. Well, I mean, you know, the Nets. I mean, they became a solid team. Lakers getting their players. I mean, I thought, you know, of course getting Howard was, you know, ridiculous, but he's hurt, and you know, I mean, who knows how long it's going to take, you know, his back to get back, you know, return to the point where he can be the same player he was before. I mean, we're talking about, you know, major surgery here, intricate and delicate. So that's a huge thing. And then Nash was, you know, great. But how will Kobe play without the ball? You know, Nash can't play without the ball. I mean, why even have him if he's playing without it? So will Kobe? I know he says he wants him, and I. Sure, he's telling the truth. He sees the benefit of it, but let's put it into practice. Let's see how he does, how that works during a game. Whether he's going to bring the ball up, you know, he's really going to give it to Nash on the break, or he's going to take it himself all the way. I thought getting Jameson was a great move, also tremendous off the bench for the Lakers. They had a terrible subs last year. You know, that was major weakness at point guard. So they fixed everything. It's just a matter of people getting healthy and proving that they know how to play the game the right way. Sound like Larry Brown.
You know, Peter, you've been covering the NBA for years. I guess I have to ask on a personal standpoint, game or favorite moment that you were able to experience as a journalist that you can say, you know what, yeah, wow, I was there for that?
Good question. Probably, you know, probably going back to the beginning. I mean, being around the, you know, the superstars when I first started covering the game, and you know, I mean, one game that stands out in my mind, I'll never forget, is, you know, Kareem hitting that hook shot against the Celtics in Game 6 of the finals that forced the series back to Milwaukee. And then Boston was able to win it in Milwaukee. I mean, that was, you know, the hook shot from the corner. You know the one I'm talking about?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah, I mean, I was going downstairs. I mean, some things you just never forget. I was going downstairs to the press room, and I'm watching it as I'm walking down. And, you know, it's a different era. Think about it. I got my typewriter in my hand, you know, and we're on deadline. And, you know, you have to send it by, you know, Pony Express, basically, or smoke signals, and that's the only way to do it. And so, you know, he hits this shot, and I'm, you know, I just was cursing. Because it just ruined my night, you know, threw everything out of whack for me and for everybody else. And that was on a deadline, and I was working for the Daily News back then, so we were a morning newspaper. It wasn't for the Post, which was an afternoon paper, unlike these days where it's morning. But anyway, that really stands out in my mind, that one.
Two more quick questions, and we're going to let you go. You were able to see Michael Jordan play. A lot of younger journalists now will never get to see that, and the whirlwind circus that went around Michael and just the atmosphere he brought to arenas. Can you explain what it was like, you know, having to cover Michael, you know, NBA writer, you know, working with the, you know, seeing him at the Garden and just seeing him do what he was able to do?
Well, I mean, I was there right from the beginning, and I mean, what stands out in my mind regarding his career is that for many years, you know, it wasn't a circus. It was, you know, Michael was, you know, a great player and acknowledged as such, but he was so accessible for the few writers that were covering from, you know, nationally. Of course, he was accessible to his own city's writers, but, you know, I was around him a lot on the road and stuff, and you could go in. Or actually, I was on, you know, in Chicago. I was there in Chicago a lot. You could go into the training room while he was being taped before the game and speak to him, and you know, he was accessible after the game. And that went on for years until he won his first title. And once that happened, then it was they were shutting the door on the media, and very difficult to get. Even me working for NBC at the time, it was very, very hard. You know, they would always let NBC into the gym first before the rest of the writers, but that didn't mean anything because he'd be in the training room, he'd be gone, Pippen would have followed him, and you know, idiots like Will Perdue, it cracks me up that you know, this guy's been doing, you know, radio for how many years for ESPN, and here's a guy that thought he was so cool that when the superstars disappeared, you know, he would say, I'm not talking either. I said, oh, my God, you know, it's even gone down to Will Perdue, and now he's on the other side of it. But anyway, that's when it got a little intolerable for me. It was, you know, yeah, you could get him to do, you know, you'd set up a feature with NBC, and he would do that kind of stuff. But then he demanded his own guy. You know, only Ahmad Rashad could do the interviews. It was ridiculous, and so, you know, it sort of lose a lot of its attraction and appeal for me. And that's the whole league kind of changed then. It started when the Pistons got their own plane. They were the first ones that traveled exclusively on a charter. And then we were no longer allowed, you know, in those days we used to travel on the same flights with the players, with the team, stay in the same hotel. They'd let you go on the bus to and from, you know, the arena and stuff. That all changed. You know, every team, you know, not all at once every team, but in the end, every team. So that's when the league to me, became drudgery in many respects.
Peter, my last question to you is very simple now. You know, we are now in a situation where media has turned into social media. There's blogs, there's Facebook, there's Twitter, and the newspaper, it seems to be in a fade. All the years you've been doing this, how do you approach this now with the way the media is?
Well, I don't, because I retired. So I basically had enough last year, not only, you know, enough of the league, but enough of my editors, too, who made it very difficult for me to cover the league by not allowing me to travel to places that I wanted to go. For instance, you know, the last 3 years, I wanted to go to – over the years, I've done a lot of trips to teams and spent a week with them. For whether it was an individual like LeBron, I went to Cleveland the year before his free agent year and spent a week in Cleveland and just hung around the team and, you know, and had access. He gave me access and whatever. But you have to go. I didn't know I was going to get that access, but you have to go there and take a shot. So I wanted to go to Oklahoma City like 3 years ago when Harden was a rookie. I thought I picked him out as being tremendous. Obviously, Durant and Westbrook were already on the rise big time. I'm pretty tight with Brooks for when he played in the league, so I felt I had some good access there. I'm tight with Cheeks. You know, it was just a good spot to go to. My editor said no. Every year, 3 years straight. Then they get into the finals. You know, and then the editor expects you to come up with something different than everybody else has. Well, you missed that boat, pal, you know? So that kind of stuff is like, if your editor doesn't care and makes your job more difficult, why are you fighting it? You know, it just doesn't make any sense. So that was it.
All right, well, Peter, listen, I thank you very much for taking a few minutes with us. I apologize for the technical difficulties earlier. And hopefully we can have you on when the season comes around a little bit more. We can dive into it. I was hoping to push. I appreciate that.
Sure. And also, I am on Twitter.
Oh, you are on Twitter. Okay, excellent.
I am because it's the only way I can get off a few of my stuff and even break a few stories. I'm the one that, you know, I broke that Bill Russell had his heart surgery last week. I broke that on Twitter.
What's the Twitter handle?
It's at Peter Vesey 1.
At Peter Vesey. Excellent. And
1. Yeah.
And I guess I'm going to throw one more quick question at you. What advice do you give to young journalists who are getting into the industry now for sports journalism?
Well, I mean, no different than I would give them back in the day. It's you know, you just got to do your homework. You know, you got to prepare for whatever you're doing. And you know, if you're trying to get a job, you know, that's the hard part. You got to get that foot in the door, and you got to take anything you can get, which is, you know, what I did and what many people have done. Unless you come out of Harvard, you know, or you come out of Columbia Journalism School, and you can get in right away. And even then, it's probably really difficult these days. But, you know, I just think you got to take any job you can, even if it's not paying well or paying at all, and learn the craft on the job, hands on, and just have some integrity and make sure you do your homework.
Peter, thank you very much for hopping on with us today. I really do appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay,
that's great
for having me. Take
that's care. the great Peter Vesey. Thank you very much. So, you know, that's in a nutshell for younger journalists. That's the NBA for more than 20 years. And I'd like to bring in my co-host, Sarah Gordon, for today. And typing this on Facebook as the day where I'm pretty much going to get my butt kicked on the air. Sarah, how are you this morning?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Just take it easy on me, because I, for those who don't know, I sort of keep my fandom to myself when I'm on air. You know, I bleed my team colors when it's time to bleed my team's colors, and Sarah is no different. But I happened to miss a good portion of the Giant Cowboy game last week, and I got back to my phone, and there was a bunch of booyahs, a bunch of ha-has, and a bunch of your stinks from Sarah. So I figured, since we're talking some NFL in a little bit, it would be appropriate to have you on with me today. So how are you so far today?
Pretty good. I'm enjoying the show. The last gentleman that you just had on, he's very eloquent.
He used to write for the Daily News, the New York Post, recently retired, one of the longest going NBA beat writers, and probably one of the best in the business. A lot of these younger writers now take his lead. They learn from him. You know, I have many old articles in my little box of journalism. I had the opportunity to have him on today. I thought it was perfect to jump at it. So. Just to let everybody know, because we jumped right in with Peter, just to follow up with everything that's been going on. This is Real Sports Talk Radio, courtesy of Back Sports Page. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/backsportspage. You can follow me on Twitter at rzeliabsp. Even though Jose is not here this week, AngryJose15 is the way to find Jose on Twitter. If you want to call into the show and beat up on me like everybody else does, 760-283-0846. Again, the phone number, 760-283-0846.
Come on.
Back Sports Page Radio.
How you doing?
Good. How are you today?
How you doing?
Good.
Good. Thanks for having me on your podcast. I'm live on my podcast on Cowboy Radio Show. You're also live on TalkShoe. My name is Jeff from the Cowboy Radio Show, Speculation Sports. Let's talk a little football week two in the National Football League, shall we? Well, I'm a big Dallas Cowboys fan, but I like all of the teams, okay? I think there's a lot of big games this week. I think my Cowboys beat the Cheater in Seattle. I think the Baby Maker and the Video Cheater have no problem in the desert, okay? I think the upset of the week, I think the Mile High Messiah is going to push Sanchez when they go down and they put the send the Steelers 0-2, all right? I think a lot of people, for some reason, sir, are taking RG3, and I like him, I respect him. I think New Orleans is tanking this season. I have my personal unbiased opinion. RG's a good quarterback. I think Jeff Fisher's better. I think he does more things that New Orleans didn't do. That's a game of the week. Those two games, the Jets and the St. Louis game with RG3, because I like our, and I think also the Minnesota Vikings in the great state of Minnesota. I think Mr. Luck goes 1-1. A lot of good games. There's four quarters in a season. You know them. There's four times four. We're the second game of the fourth of the first quarter of the National Football League Week Two. And a lot of big games. Green Bay Packers beat the city of organized crime. Chicago. Cutler has got to learn to get his eyes checked to the right jersey and also get rid of the ball. I mean, there's been a lot. My Cowboys got to beat the Cheater in Seattle or Wussy Boy and Nancy Boy and my Cowboys. So I think a lot of big games. What's your favorite? What's some of your games week this week? As you're on my pod, what's your favorite game? One game, if you could be, sir, I could wiggle my nose and you'd be at 50-yard line. What's the one game you want to be at?
If I had to pick one game, to be honest with you, and this will surprise you, I would probably have to say either Detroit and San Francisco or Denver and Atlanta.
I agree. I totally agree. Niners is my team, if you want to put it that way, to go to the Super Bowl this year. Before they got the punk, Randy Moss, because I told people on my podcast, I have two podcasts, which you're on right now, the Cowboy Radio Show, the Big Show, with Bill Clinton and friends, because I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. All right, that's what we're doing here. But at the end of the day, when we were doing, because I tell you what, man, I tell you what, you guys, I was arguing with Calpo a little while ago, man. We had the 44th on, too. Well, we had Barack and Obama here. And I tell you what, right now, martial law will be declared. RG3 will win today in St. Louis. And this podcast that you're on right now is an imbecile. My name is Barack Obama, and I approve this message. But anywho, I'm going to tell you something right now. Before they got the punk Randy Moss down there, and before this, the parasite
went up to the cheater in Seattle, and that was a waste of time. I'm going to tell you right now, on my show on Tuesday night, Monday night, when I do my, you know, Monday Night Madness, I'm going to go through all the 15 games, and the cheater loses my Cowboys on Tuesday night and Wednesday night, I will throw my hat into the ring to coach the Seattle Seahawks. Kobe the Kitty, my big cat. My name is Kobe Kitty, and I hereby want to be a coach of the Seattle Seahawks. Meow, meow, meow. So we're gonna have a job interviews on my podcast on Tuesday night on the roundtable if he loses to the Cowgirls when my Cowboys go up there, because they got to tell you after. I want to ask you a question. When my Cowboys went into New York Giants on the Poor Network, you know, on NBC, and all the trophies were there, I said on my podcast numerous times, I think the New York Giants, if you're a fan of the New York Giants, put yourself in the New York Giants' shoes, sir. Would you be embarrassed to lose to the Cowboys like they did on national TV in front of all the poor people, and it was your time, your moment, your defending champs? I would be embarrassed if I was New York Giants and my Dallas Cowboys came in there and beat you like a red stepchild. Because I want to be crystal clear as a chandelier. Crystal clear as a chandelier. I love all respect for Mr. Tommy Coughlin, but he was a conservative in the Republican Party, and Wussy Boy, Nancy Boy, were liberals in the Democrat, and they made ballsy calls on that Wednesday night. And I just think I would be frankly embarrassed if I was a New York Football Giants fan. Agree or disagree?
I'm not arguing that, but especially when the players come out this week and sit there saying that they're more prepared this week for the Buccaneers than they were for the Cowboys on week one. And now, especially now, where I hate to say it, the Giants are the worst team in the NFC East record-wise, the only team that didn't win last week. Right now, the contemplation the Giants are having is whether they can offer out the Plaxico Burress, because Plaxico has shown interest about returning to the Giant. Put Plaxico back in the two spots.
I agree, but here's what I think.
Spot.
I think the homicidal streets of Baltimore rolls into the land of animals and savages. That would be the city of Beverly Shelves. I think they go in there and they chase the convicted felon out of his dog cage, and you know the thug number 52 is going to say, he leaves the confines of his cage, you go after him. I think the homicidal streets of Baltimore goes in the city of Beverly Shove, and my Cowboys are 2-0. The city of Beverly Shove is 1-1. The Giants get lucky and beat Tampa, because if they lose, they sell the team on national TV for a dollar to Sarah the Critter Palin, to spend kind of my show up in Alaska. And Tommy Coughlin resigns on national TV, and they forfeit the rest of the season. Okay, if they go 0-1-2 and they forfeit the rest of the season, Tommy Coughlin takes the Greyhound bus and leaves with his trophy as well, his two trophies. But I think Christmas will be in September, Monday morning. If my Cowboys are 2-0 at the end of, Sunday, Kobe the Kitty is my father, and my twin brother slept with my wife and impregnated her. So that's the whole point is, I think it's going to be a good week. I think the city of Beverly Shove gets beat by Baltimore. I think the Giants slip by Tampa. They cover those points, and RG3 gets taught a lesson in St. Louis by Fisher.
All right, well, cool. Thank you for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
I'm into overtime right now, so I'm. If you want to talk about some more or not?
Well, I have. We
you
have
to talk
really
some
quickly,
more.
We have to segue right. Clock out real quick, and then we're going to be hitting more football later on.
You want to talk NHL lockout?
We have one of our own coming on to do that, my friend. But thank you for the call. I really do appreciate it.
I'll do real quick. I'm a Blackhawks fan. I live here in the great state of Minnesota. Big hockey fan. I'm frankly embarrassed of the troll and everybody all involved. If they don't come back, we have to turn our back on the NHL and the shield of the NHL, because they did it once before, and they actually have a team down in California. No one knows about, no one's scared about holding the cup, and they're going to rule a lot of goodwill in the NHL, control violence. So I'm frankly embarrassed. Being a Blackhawks fan and a Minnesota fan, I really bummed out. But thank you very much. This is Speculation Sports. We speculate you in the Cowport Radio with Bill Clinton, because I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Mr. Whiskey. Got it?
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Wow. Wow. I was trying to get a word in. I was trying to cut. Okay, first off, this is why they don't let people drink in the morning and be on the internet. This is crazy. All right. We're going to segue over to Ryan Stern, our back sports page, hockey expert guru. Ryan, did you hear all
There was so many things that was just going on right now. I mean, First we went into Bill Clinton's Monica Lewinsky thing, and then my Cowboys. Gee, I didn't know yet. Jerry Jones on the air this morning.
Yeah, I thought I was on CNN for a minute there, and it really threw me off. I'm not going to lie.
Wow.
Like, listen, Ryan, you know me for years. I don't drink, but I think after that guy, I think I might start.
I recommend it.
Ryan, you're on with Randy Zelia and Sarah Gordon. Of course, Real Sports Talk. Jose is off this week. Okay, so fill me in. Let's pretend I know nothing about hockey, because we both know I don't.
So we don't have to pretend all that much.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. So fill me in. What is going on right now with the lockout?
What's going on right now is that neither side feels any sense of urgency to get a deal done to come down from their stance. Right now, neither side would be making money. Players don't earn paychecks until the regular season starts, and owners don't receive money until home games start rolling in. So right now, both sides feel that they still have the upper hand because they think they're right, and they're still very far apart.
Like, what's far apart? How much money are we talking about? Like, what percentage are we? Because I know the players took a 25% rollback on the last.
Right. The big issue with this year's lockout is the player's share of the total hockey revenue, which was a big thing in last year's potential NFL lockout. The players last year received 57% of the total hockey revenue, and they want to stay there. The owners want that 57%. So you're talking a span of 14% difference. From what I read, the last proposal was that the owners will come as low as 53% for them, and the players, from what I've heard, will not go below 50% that they would be getting. So, like I said, they're still very far apart.
At any point, do you think that this is going to get fixed? At what point do you think this will get fixed? Do you think this is one of those things where they're going to wait till regular season games are supposed to be there?
Yes. I can see something similar to the NBA last year, but I think it may happen a little bit earlier because the NHL of all sports can afford least of any of the four majors to lose long-term games of the season due to the point that there was a lockout only 8 years ago. I do see something getting done by Thanksgiving.
Okay, so not for nothing, and you know, a casual sports fan, and Sarah, you can sort of chime in here as a casual sports fan. I don't think the NHL till football is over anyway.
Aside from, I mean, if you go by ESPN, the NHL season starts in the playoffs, and there are only two teams that play in the playoffs.
Yeah, but you know better. You know better than that, though, because ESPN is not the only sports outlet. It might be the biggest, but there's more out there. And like I'm saying as a casual sports fan.
Yes, the casual sports fan normally will care more about football than they will hockey, and yes, they will not jump into hockey until the Super Bowl is over. That I agree with. But the casual sports fan isn't going to be the one that's going to care so much about a lockout. It's the diehard NHL fans that are going to really be affected.
And Sarah, did you want to chime in on that as well, as being a casual sport?
Well, for me, if I'm going to watch a hockey game, the only way that I'm going to actually watch it is if it's the only thing on TV. I don't really follow hockey. I don't understand why people do. The only part of hockey that I enjoy is the fighting when they beat each other up. But, I mean, for my perspective, I guess you could say, is that if they don't want to work this out between the players and the owners, they're not going to until somebody's really hurting. And it's going to end up being the coaches and the players completely getting ticked off at the owners to the point where some of them are going to want to get on a different team. It's just going to be a big, for lack of a better term, yucky mess.
I like the
I'm going to disagree a little bit because I think with the way that the CBA is laid out, the ones that are going to get hurt first are going to be the owners because the players now do have the option to go overseas, and the MVP of the NHL, Evgeny Malkin from the Pittsburgh Penguins, 2 hours after the NHL owners locked out the players, signed for a former team of his over in Russia. And he had already stated that if he goes over there because of a lockout, he will not play in the NHL this year, even if they come back. So the NHL, the owners, part owner of the Pittsburgh Penguins is one of the greatest players of all time, Mario Lemieux. He just lost the MVP of the league because of the lockout. And I think that if more players come out and say they're going to play overseas and play the whole year, you're going to see the owners come down from their stance a little quicker.
Yeah, but if more players leave, like the MVP guy did, doesn't that also hurt his teammates? Because they got so used to him being there, being the best one on the team, doing all the work, but doing a bunch of work. So, in a sense, that's also hurting the other players. Because now
right,
they're not going to
a lot of those players also have the option of going overseas and doing the same thing that he does. Yes, there is a sense of loyalty to a team, but if the owners are not, if you are that against the owners and they're not willing to do their part in paying the players, then I think you're going to start seeing more and more big-time players start going overseas. I know Henrik Lundqvist from the New York Rangers, who won the Vezina as the top goaltender in the league, already said that he will play for his Swedish elite team, Frölunda, if there is a lockout, but he did say that if the lockout ended, he will come back and play in the NHL this year. And I do think that most of the players will do that, just like the NBA players who went over to Turkey and to China last year to play. I think most of them will come back, but there will be some that won't, because in the KHL, which is the Russian version of the NHL, there is no salary cap. There is no limit to how much a player can make, and they are already making more on average than most NHL players.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that one.
Yeah.
Ryan, the big question, I guess, is going to come up, because a lot of these owners currently own other franchises. I think they said as owners are also own NBA teams as well. Is this go down as almost like a stare down to see who blinks first? And if so, you just said around Thanksgiving time that this thing could be resolved. Can the NHL afford to go without a hockey season this year?
No. No, the players can't afford. The players can somewhat not afford unless they go overseas. The owners will lose the teams. There will be retraction if there is a lost season. I can guarantee there will be at least four teams that will be lost if there is no season.
All right. Ryan, thank you for coming on to go on with that. And real quick, what's your NFL sleeper game of the week?
Let's see. My NFL sleeper game of the week, watch out for the I'm really excited to actually see the Indianapolis Colts against Minnesota Vikings. As horrible of a game that may seem, we're talking about Andrew Luck, who's the number one pick in the NFL, going up against Adrian Peterson, who's coming off the ACL, MCL, PCL, VCL, LCL surgery, and no one gave him any chance to play week one, and he scored two touchdowns. So I'm actually looking forward to that game to see if both teams can continue what they've got going for them. And Randy, Happy New Year, my mishpucha.
Yes, Rosh Hashanah. Happy Rosh Hashanah to you too, my friend. Thanks for coming on, Ryan.
All right, have a good one.
I feel so informed when I start learning things I don't know about like that. Like, I don't know anything about hockey, and I just feel like now I feel like so smart. It's amazing.
that won't last long.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
You know what the fun in sports we have coming up now in the last 18 months? We've had the NFL, the NBA, now the NHL. Is this the type of example you want, you know, your son to have? I guess that's a very honest question to ask that.
Not at all. I mean, I think this that what the players are doing is just showing the younger kids that money is more important than the actual game itself. I mean, when I was growing up, I remember players for, it doesn't matter what sport it was, they played because they loved the sport. I mean, yeah, you had the occasional money-hungry players, but, you know, like for baseball, you had Daryl Strawberry, who really loved the game. For basketball, you had Michael Jordan, who really loved the game. You know, I mean, there was always so many players that were not your typical players nowadays. You know, it was more fun, I guess you could say, to watch those games than it is now, because now everybody just wants a bigger paycheck. They're all egotistical, think that they deserve more money than anybody else. And it's to the point where it's become ridiculous. And it's a complete and total bad example for kids nowadays.
I'm gonna throw a little devil's advocate at you. You know, we say Michael Jordan for the love of the game, and yes, Michael Jordan probably was the greatest basketball player of our generation, of our time. But at the same time, he had something called the love of the game clause in his contract. So if he doesn't want to play anymore, he doesn't have to play. But at the same time, he was also one of the reasons why the NBA went into a major salary structure was Michael Jordan was making up to $20 to $25 million a season. So, you know, we can also question that love of the game. You know, when you're making dollars, of course you're going to love it because you're making that much money. But, you know, Michael Jordan, you wish you had those types of players who love the game and you know, wants to win, because he does set an example. With the exception of what happened in Colorado for Kobe Bryant, I think Kobe Bryant is the second coming of Michael Jordan.
Not at all. Really?
No. I would love to hear your opinion to hear this.
I completely disagree. I think that Kobe is to the point, yeah, he's got great skills, but he's to the point where he doesn't seem like he loves the game. He loves the paycheck. For me, I would say the next Michael Jordan type is actually LeBron James, personally, because I think he really loves basketball. He wants to make the people around him better. It's not the LeBron James show. It's the whole team. With Kobe, it seems like it's the Kobe show. So, I mean, I don't think Kobe is the next Michael Jordan. I don't think anybody could be the next Michael Jordan. But for me, LeBron is the closest thing that you're going to get to another Michael Jordan.
See, I look at LeBron James as like a Magic Johnson type, where Magic just bought the best out of everybody that was around him. And LeBron seems to be missing that assassin type of feeling at the end of the game, where you know at the end of the game ball's going to be in his hands, and he wants to take the final shot, or he wants to make that final play happen. LeBron has seemed to struggle in the clutch. I've been one of his, I guess if you want to call it what the kids call today, haters. I've been one of the people who has been on him because I want to see him succeed. But the problem is he's put himself in situations where it's very difficult for him to succeed. And now, you know, he put himself in this situation in Miami where he's playing with two of the other best players in basketball. Whereas, you know, Michael Jordan made the comment of, I would never have gone to play with Larry Bird or Magic Johnson to go win. I wanted to beat those guys. That was Michael's attitude. LeBron went to go play with them instead of to try and beat them, which I guess that's where my biggest disparity with Michael and LeBron is.
Yeah, well, that's understandable.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The thing with Michael was that, you know, after he retired, came back with the Wizards, he took a team from obscurity and took them to the playoffs. I think that if you tried doing the same situation with Kobe, it wouldn't work. If you tried doing the same situation with LeBron James, I think it would. I think he'd be able to rally the guys around him and push them to do better.
You know, it's funny you just said that. You know, people got, and this is where I'm going to defend LeBron James. People got on LeBron James because when he was playing with the Cleveland Cavaliers, he couldn't carry the team. He couldn't win the big one for his team. And he, obviously when he went to Miami, that changed. But people don't realize Michael Jordan didn't win his first championship until he was in his eighth or ninth year in the league. And that's, you know, that was also while he was 4 years of playing college. Out of high school. They put so much more pressure on him because of that. You know, it's your eighth or ninth year, LeBron, you have to win the championship because that's what Michael did. But Michael had 4 years of college and learning how to win and took his bumps in the NBA and he learned how to win. I think, I said to Peter, you know, was it the Miami Heat a better team or did they take advantage of the matchup that they had? And during the offseason, they didn't really make a lot of changes to their team, whereas everybody else is making changes so they can beat Miami, just like the Cowboys. Team to beat right now because they're the Super Bowl champions, and the Cowboys prepared to beat the Giants, whereas, you know, the Giants were there to show up and, you know, hold up their trophy. And
yes, they didn't show up. The New York Giants did not show up at all. They choked, completely and totally choked. And their home turf, defending champions, could not do it. They choked.
And this is why when I hyped today's show, I said that I was in for it. Because the minute I would have said the Giants didn't show up or they didn't bring their best game, this is what was going to happen. I'm telling you. This young lady who's on the line with me is very, very, very strong-willed about her Dallas Cowboys. I'm telling you right now, and she's not afraid to call it like it is. And not only that, but when Ryan interrupted her, I think she would have gone through the phone and said, "Wait, I was talking." Just so everybody knows what's coming up here so far on Real Sports Talk Radio. At 11 a.m., we have David Mignano. He's one of our NFL experts. We're going to break down some of the games and some of the. Since you two are Boys fans, I'm going to get beaten up today, which is, you know, he wanted to come on last Sunday. We just ran out of time. So I'm going to get beaten up today pretty well for being a Giants fan. But we'll also break down the Cowboys-Seahawks game coming up later in the afternoon. And then also around 11:15, we have Nick Singleton from Back Sports Page Baseball. We're going to talk about the AL East race between the Yankees and the Orioles. So we have a lot of stuff still coming on, a lot of things still happening here. We've had some interesting calls so far today, folks. 760-6. If you need to find me on Facebook, it's Facebook/Randy Zelia, and also on Twitter at Facebook. I'm sorry, no. If I'm on Twitter, I wouldn't be on Facebook. On Twitter /RZelia. Okay, really? RZelia BSP. And Back Sports Page is on Facebook as well. And, of course, go to BackSportsPage.com where you can see great features on Derek Jeter, Paul O'Neill, Jason Kidd, Robert Hainsworth, and much, much more. So don't forget to go there to check out the different perspective of the sports industry. We're not ESPN. We're not Yahoo Sports. So definitely check us out.
It's definitely worth it to check it out. I was checking out the website earlier today. there's some really good stories on there. I mean, I can't think of any of the topics off the top of my head because I'm reading something right now, checking out some of the stats for the football games later, so that way I don't sound like a completely clueless. But, yeah, no, check out the website, guys. I really think you're going to enjoy it. There's a lot of good stories on there. There's a lot of good writers. I mean, it shows you something other than your typical sports information. It tells you more about the players, gives you better background information, lets you know about their charities, all sorts of other things that the players do, not just that, not just like the Cowboys totally destroyed the Giants or stuff like that. So check it out.
Well, I'm gonna ask you a question. We're gonna get away from pro sports because again, Back Sports Page is not all about pro sports. We like to do human interest stories and other topics that go around not only the pro sports industry, but not just about the college world, but also outside in communities as well. And as a parent who's involved with recreation sports, how do you think the kids watching professional sports affects how the kids try and play and the types of coaches now, the way they teach these kids how to play?
Well, the biggest problem I have from my standpoint is that the coaches don't do enough teaching anymore. They don't push the fundamentals. You know, they don't emphasize the importance of going home and practicing the same things over and over. You know, it's too much of, oh, we've got to beat this team, we've got to win. Oh, you didn't score any goals today in soccer, we lost because of you. You know, there's just entirely too much emphasis put on to winning a game instead of teaching them, A, how to play the game, and B, how to love the game. I mean, I'm a huge sports fan when it comes to my son. He's 9 and a half, for those who don't know. He plays soccer, basketball, baseball, indoor soccer, flag football. You know, I mean, he's a genuine sports player. And I mean, he's got the biggest heart of any kid you'll ever meet. I mean, he loves sports. And there's not enough coaches out there nowadays that really focus on the sports aspect of it. They focus too much on winning. And it's really hurting the kids. I mean, they see on TV the professional players that are putting so much emphasis on how much money they're making that it becomes not fair to the kids. Because now they think they've got to win every game. They think that they've got to become a professional sports player, and they don't have fun anymore. It's nuts.
How would you change it?
If it were up to me, I would make every coach for every sport take mandatory classes every year, whether it's a class on anti-bullying, because there's bullying in sports. Whether it's just relearning the basics or taking a class on how to improve your drills that you run. I mean, there's so many things that people can do and that coaches can do, but they don't go and do it.
Do you think it should be mandatory when they sign up as a coach that they have to do like a certain amount of hours in a class for that particular sport, or basically a way of talking to the kids? Because obviously, you know, as a parent, there's a certain way you can teach your son. And then when another parent takes over his coaching, it almost, you know, he tries to imply his thoughts and his way of handling things. Do you think that there should be a mandatory, I guess, a general way on how they should handle coaching at that age?
Oh, definitely. Especially from the early on. I mean, there's coaches out there that are coaching just because they want their kid to play the entire game. They think their kid is going to be a professional at whatever sport it is that they're doing, so they coach, whether they actually know the sport or not. So there should be a requirement for people that want to coach to have to go take classes. I mean, I had to take for coaching my son for some of the rec teams that he plays on. For coaching, I had to get a license to do it. And what you get one license and then you're done. You don't need to go back and do anything else. There's no other requirements. But there should be. You should have to go every season or every year, however you want to look at it, to re-educate yourself. Just so that way these kids are learning the newest drills, the most up-to-date techniques. You know, just the basic fundamentals are so important, and not enough coaches teach that.
I find it interesting too, because you know, I was with you when your son went to his basketball camp this year, and I've always basketball. You know, the game of basketball is my passion. When I see things that are not being done right in high school games or college games or even some of the pros things, I remember when I was working with the Nets, there was a player, I was watching him, and his name is Brandon Armstrong. Brandon doesn't play in the NBA anymore. But I remember at the time, it amazes me on how when I step on the NBA court, something just doesn't go right. And I just, without even thinking about it, because when I was coaching high school, I just told him, like, you know, you're falling short on your jump shot. You're just, you know, instead of shooting up and over, you're just, you know, you're dead-arming it a little bit. That's the name that I always used to call it. You're dead-arming, and that's the terminology. He was so used to putting legs in his shot. It was everything turning upper body. He just made some adjustments. He had a nice little career. He obviously made his money and was able to walk away. But, you know, it's the little things like the fundamentals that people don't really realize. Like you just said, the parents trying to get their kid to be the star. But it alienates the parents, and it discourages the children. And this, trust me, there's so much more just with this type of topic we can break into. We're sort of against the clock because we have David Magnano, one of our NFL experts and fellow Cal. David, I did everything I can last week to avoid having you on the show because I didn't want to get beaten up. And
I know you did.
Yeah, I know. I see, and it just wasn't fair. So you two now can take your proverbial shots at me, because I remember David texting you sitting there saying, "Yeah, you know," I said, "off the record, Giants are going to kill him." So go ahead. I deserve to take my pot shot. And Sarah, just to show you on how much I put this young man through, I made him come with me to a charity event for the Giants, and he's a Cowboy fan. So he took a brown beating from me. So it's okay. I deserve to take it.
Well, it's okay, because honestly, that game was pretty bad from both sides. Cowboys' offensive line was terrible. I mean, DeMarco Murray got it going in the second half, but there were so many false starts. There was holding penalties, delayed games. I mean, their offense really didn't look like it was clicking to the best of their abilities. So I guess it's a good sign that they still won that game. Obviously, Kevin Ogletree made a big deal when he had a chance against those fifth-string cornerbacks. But this week's going to be a telling sign, because Seattle has a very good defense. They're not playing fifth-stringers. So is Ogletree going to be the next Lauren Robinson? Is he going to be just, you know, another third-string guy that had one big game? You know, we're going to find out today.
Really quickly, with the obviously, we can keep going over this whole Giant-Cowboy game. And one of the comments that was made while and Sarah messaged me during this, when this guy was on, I was trying to give some insight news that I had received, that Plaxico Burress is in talks with the New York Giants about possibly returning. And it would sort of help the Giants in a way by putting Plaxico in that second receiver spot and moving Victor Cruz back to the three spot, because Plaxico can play the slot spot, and then obviously Cruz will be have a little bit more attention taken off him, and he'll be able to have a little bit more success, because Cruz right now is playing in a spot he has never played before. He's always been the third receiver. Now he's playing in the second spot, and it's totally throwing him off.
Yeah, and the thing about Victor Cruz is, as you saw last year and as you saw a couple years ago with Steve Smith, Eli Manning, he just loves his slot receivers. He seems to kind of look for them when he's in trouble. So Victor Cruz, I feel, was the beneficiary of Eli Manning really looking his way a lot. Victor Cruz, he's not the tallest guy in the world. He's not the biggest guy in the world. So he kind of fits that slot role real well. He's fast. He's obviously has a lot of agility. So to have him outside wide where, you know, you have guys 6'3", 6'2", he's not Hakeem Nicks. He's not Dez Bryant. He's not Jeremy Maclin. He needs to be in that slot, in my opinion. Now, if they sign Plaxico Burress, it's a really good sign to me because he gives them a red zone threat. And if Nicks, you know, if Nicks is still hurting from that foot injury, he says he's not. I think he probably still is. Well, they need a guy like Burris to be in the red zone to throw up balls, too, because if Nicks can't jump, Nicks can't cut like he usually can, they're going to be in trouble.
Let's move on to this week. I don't know, Sarah, did you want to add anything to this?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, okay. David, and obviously the Green Bay-Chicago game is already done. I thought, you know, Chicago...
What a terrible game that was.
Chicago's offensive line is a disgrace. I think they, I, like we were just talking about, you know, teaching fundamentals. I think the Chicago offensive line has to go back to school and learn the fundamentals of the game. It was a pretty tough game to watch. You know, this week's list of games are not exactly the sexy lists of games you want to see in the NFL. You know, the Kansas City Buffaloes, the Cleveland Cincinnati's, Minneapolis and Indianapolis. Minnesota and Indy. Houston and Jacksonville's one sided. I think Oakland, Miami's one sided. Arizona, New England's one sided. Washington, St. Louis is not going to have a big viewership. I know people want to watch RG3, but I just don't see that being a marquee game. There's not a lot of games out there today that people are going to want to, you know, want to stay in and sort of mess around with the ticket. I think today's, if you're a fantasy guy, you'll just follow on your phone, and that's really it.
Yeah, well, the thing the NFL does is, I mean, it's not really the NFL, it's a lot of sports. The week one, obviously, is their big opening week, so they want to have the big matchups, Cowboys, Giants, and all the other the rivalries. But you're going to see week two, week three, they're going to be those kind of mundane games because they want to get them out of the way. They want to have the end of the season, you know, the rivalry games. They want to have the, which is kind of weird that the Giants and Cowboys play their second game, I think it's, what, week six, week eight, and then they're done, which is kind of weird to me. I've never kind of seen that. But I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I don't know the schedule off the top of my head. And as a fantasy player, yeah, I'm kind of setting my lineup and letting it go. But I'm not surprised at all that they're kind of doing the Monday games early. They just want to get them out of the way.
It's week 8 that the Giants and Cowboys play. October 28th is the next time they meet up.
Yeah, they meet up in Dallas. They meet up in Dallas. It's a 4:25 game on Fox.
Yep.
That's going to be interesting. It's going to be a very, very, very interesting game.
Cowboys are going to win.
It's surprising that it's week 8. It's surprising that it's going to be week 8 and they're going to be done because usually if they're not finishing the season, they're playing week 16, week 15. Because of that viewership, the Giants and the Cowboys, they're both two big market teams. They have a lot of nationwide following. So the idea that they're playing them two times and week 8 they're done, it kind of mind-boggles me.
Well, I think they're doing that because of what happened last year, where last year they played, and then I think like 2 weeks later they played again. So I think they were trying to adjust from last year's stupid scheduling.
Well, I think this year also, I think for the NFC East, I'm not going to look at it from a Cowboy or Giant perspective. The NFC East is more competitive, so I think they're trying to spread out the games, and I think the way they do it in this situation, they try and do it where, well, last year was a rare occasion where the Giants and Cowboys didn't really meet until, you know, the last couple weeks of the season both times. This year, usually they do it where they'll meet once, and then after they sort of go through the schedule one time through, then they go for the second time. That was my understanding on how they're doing it, and the Giants and the Cowboys is probably one of the best, if not the best rivalry in football. It's definitely one of the best. I'll be perfectly honest with you, and Sarah and I have had this conversation before about the Cowboys and, you know, and the Yankees. I know, David, I'm crossing over sports, and you might get confused because you don't follow baseball that much.
I don't.
I'm messing with you. With that being said, the Cowboys and the Yankees are the most recognizable teams. I think the difference between the two is the Yankees, you know, both had hothead owners, both who make reactional decisions. The Yankees, though, have had more success, and I also think it's because the common goal. I'm not saying that Romo doesn't want to win. I'm not saying that their receivers don't want to win. I think it's one of those things right now. It's Jerry Jones has to get out of his own way and let people do their job. You know, Steinbrenner was involved with a lot of the Yankees' decisions, but he, at the end of the day, he let Brian Cashman do the majority of his job. You know, what's the point of having the Cowboys GM?
Absolutely.
Well, Jerry Jones is the Cowboys GM.
No, he's the owner. He's the owner. He's
and the GM.
GM.
And the GM.
He's not the GM.
Then who is?
Okay, I'll be glad. I'm going to look that up. I'm going to look that up right now. But while I'm also, while we're also saying that, I'm also going to be also flat out and saying that, and this is me taking my journalism hat off, Giants are going to get us. I'm just saying that right now. But, David, real quick, while I'm looking this up, let's pick some games. And I have Jose's picks here, too. Jose wants to have a show with you one-on-one, by the way, David.
Okay, we can do that.
Jose is not happy with you from the last time you were on because you questioned every one of his fantasy picks. So I'm just saying. So let's go Kansas City-Buffalo real quick.
Buffalo.
Cleveland-Cincinnati.
Cincinnati.
Minneapolis-Minnesota. I keep calling it Minneapolis. It's Minnesota. Minnesota-Indianapolis.
Minnesota.
New Orleans, Carolina.
New Orleans.
Oakland, Miami.
Oakland, big.
Houston and Jacksonville.
Houston.
This is a dumb question. Arizona, New England.
Arizona. Just kidding. New England.
Tampa Bay, New York Giants.
Giants.
Baltimore, Philly.
But Giants closer than you think.
Yes, I say less than 7 on that one, to be honest with you.
I know what that.
Baltimore, Philly.
Wait, who? Baltimore and Philly? Oh, that's a good game. Man. I'm going to go Baltimore just because Macklin and D-Jax are both banged up.
Okay. Washington, St. Louis.
Washington.
Jets, Pittsburgh.
Pitt.
Tennessee, San Diego.
Tennessee. Even though Nate Wash is banged up and Kenny Britt's going to be on limited snaps, I think Chris Johnson has a bounce back here.
Detroit, San Francisco.
Ooh, that's a good offense versus a good defense. Just because I have Stafford on three teams, we're going to go Detroit, but that one's kind of a toss up.
Denver and Atlanta.
Atlanta.
Cowboys, Seahawks.
I'm going to go Cowboys, but it's going to be another close game. It's going to be, I think it's going to be like 21-17. I think the Seattle secondary is going to give the Cowboys fits today.
Sarah, you want to argue that one at all?
No.
this is why she's the best in the business. All right, David, I'll be honest with you, buddy. I have some disagree. I'll go over Jose's picks for this week real quick while we're doing this now. Jose has the Jets. Obviously, you both don't know, like, Jose and I pick 5 games every week and then a bonus game. So we go head-to-head for 5 if we need to, and then we each pick a separate game. He chose the Jets. We chose Jets-Pittsburgh. I choose Pittsburgh. He's choosing the Jets. Giants-Tampa Bay. We both picked the Giants. He chooses 24-14. I disagree. I think the Eagles are going to be upset Baltimore. He's choosing Baltimore. We both choose San Fran over Detroit, and I choose Atlanta over Denver, and he's choosing Denver over Atlanta. His bonus game for this week is, and just pulling it up, is Cincinnati over Cleveland, which is a very, he chooses Cincinnati over Cleveland. Obviously, like I said, I choose Atlanta, I choose San Fran, I choose Philly. I choose the Giants, and I choose Pittsburgh, and my pick game was New Orleans over Carolina. So that was my bonus game. I was 4-1 last week. Jose was 2-3. So the picks, I'm going to get Sarah's picks in a few minutes, and I was wrong about Jerry Jones.
No, I think you're 100% right that Jerry Jones needs to get out of his own way. He is the GM of that team, so obviously he makes all the personnel decisions. But, you know, the thing about Steinbrenner, as you said, you know, even though the 70s they were winning, in the 80s and the early 90s, they couldn't, you know, win anything. Once Steinbrenner got out of his own way, Brian Cashman came in, you know, they obviously started winning. Now, I agree that that's, a lot of it was organizational depth, Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, Andy Pettit, Jorge Posada. But I really believe that a good owner hires someone to do a job and then lets them do that job, and Jerry Jones does not do that because he is the owner and GM.
He's got to get his hand out of the cookie jar.
Now, the thing about the Cowboys, too, this year, I think they're a Super Bowl contender. Now that they have a secondary, you saw Maurice Claiborne, he shut down Hakeem Nicks, you know, his first NFL game, his real first real NFL game, he shut down, you know, a top 10 receiver. That is a big deal for him, even though Nicks is, you know, obviously banged up. It's a big deal for him. It's a big deal for the Cowboys. So to have Claiborne playing well, at least in week one, to have Brandon Carr on the other side of the field to shut down that secondary receiver, especially in leagues, you know, like the NFC East, where you have Jeremy Maclin and Deshaun Jackson. You have Victor Cruz and Hakeem Nicks. Even in Washington, you have Pierre Garçon and, well, that's about it. But they have a secondary to shut somebody down. That's the biggest thing the Cowboys were missing last year. A lot of games, they would get up big, and then teams would have to start throwing, and they could. And then they would lose in the fourth quarter because teams just threw and threw and threw on Terrence Newman. That might not be the case this year. If Dez Bryant can stay healthy and play a full four quarters, which he hasn't yet, if Miles Austin can stay off the injury report with that hamstring, if Jason Witten can come back from that spleen, you know, they're as good as any team in the NFL.
Well, I think the biggest problem that the Cowboys have is that they do not have the ability to keep it together. It seems every time the fourth quarter, no matter what they do, who they have in, they can't hold it together. And I think if we got a quarterback, I mean, I think Tony Romo is actually a great quarterback. I don't think he is Super Bowl caliber. I don't think he has the ability to step up and to take the team past week two in the playoffs. I don't think he has it.
Well, I think in terms of talent, he definitely does. But I agree with you in the sense that he has not proven it in terms of, you know, what's the one thing about Eli Manning? I mean, Amani Toomer was right. Tony Romo statistically is the better quarterback than Eli. But Eli he's proven that he can win late. He's proven that he comes up big in a big spot. You know, and Romo, as much as I'm a Cowboys fan, Romo has done nothing but shrink in the big spot. I mean, even going back to 06 when he fumbled that easy, the place kick in Seattle. I mean, who does that? So
Tony Romo.
Romo has to prove in December, because it's December where they collapse. They always start off strong.
Yep.
He has to prove in December that they can win, and he has to prove in the playoffs. Now, you see that Dallas is in talks with Romo about an extension. I'm not going to say it's a bad move because Romo still is a top 10 quarterback, but he should have to prove himself later in the season. Now, the one good thing, if he stays healthy, is DeMarco Murray, because the Cowboys last year did not have that clock killer. You know, Murray came in, he played a few games, and then he broke his ankle.
No, the Giants broke his ankle.
Here we go.
He didn't break his ankle. The Giants broke his ankle.
The Giants did break his ankle, Randy. I'm just saying, that was kind of a cheap shot. No, I'm just kidding.
You know,
they broke Tony Romo's collarbone, picked him up and slammed him on the ground.
Felix Jones is absolutely garbage. He's trash. I would rather have DJ Ware than Felix Jones.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that dialogue was going so well before it came over to back Giants. But that's okay. Now, here's a solid question for the Cowboys fans. Rest of the season, do you think that the health issues of Miles Austin the discipline issues of Dez Bryant and the overall health of the defense and making sure Romo can stay consistent. Can those things happen? Can all those things be controlled through a 16-game season and going into the playoffs?
Oh, yeah, definitely. If
well,
they want
I think
that,
it has,
they can.
I think it has to be seen. I think everything you said is a fair question. Austin has chronic hamstring issues, which is a big deal for a receiver who has to make cuts. He has to, you know, make short burst sprints down the field. Dez Bryant has not shown yet that he can be an adult. Now, he has this new security team that he hired, or probably Jerry Jones really hired, that's supposed to keep him in check. Does that mean he stays in the field? Does that mean he keeps his head in the game? I don't know. I mean, you saw last in week one, Dez Bryant, first half, 4 catches for 84 yards, and then he was gone in the second half. I've never seen such a skilled, talented player just disappear every second half of every game. If Dez Bryant kept his head in the game, if Dez Bryant lived up to his full potential, and you guys are going to call me crazy, I could see him being a poor man's Calvin Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
I can see him being better than Julio Jones, better than Larry Fitzgerald, because he has such talent and such size and such strength. But as you see in a lot of sports, a lot of times it comes down to the head.
Yep. Definitely with him. His biggest problem is himself. If he stops trying to be like Terrell Owens and actually played the whole game the way that he did the first half, I mean, he would be phenomenal. He would be one of the best players in the league.
It's interesting you bring up T.O. too, because it's almost like he does want to be like T.O., like you just said, but he hasn't had the production. I mean, at least T.O. went through all the craziness, all the drama, but he still put up 100 yards and 2 touchdowns every game.
Yeah.
I think Dez Bryant has won 100-yard receiving game his entire career. This is going into his third season. And a guy of his talent, a guy of his stature, you know, it should be more. At least with Romo's passing the ball. Romo passes the ball as much as anybody in the league. He's better than Austin. As you see, a lot of defensive schemes are centered around Dez Bryant. Coaches know that he is the real talent there. So the idea that he cannot put up a 100-yard receiving game, it's on him. I'm sorry, it's on him. It's not on Romo.
Completely and totally. I agree with you 100% on that one.
All right. David, we're against the clock, buddy. Thanks for calling in. Are you still down in AC?
Yeah, man. I had a rough night last night, so I'm trying to recover this morning. I'm trying to recover right now.
Well, listen, I'll talk to you during the week. We have some big things coming up, especially Cowboy-wise, my friend, so be ready.
All right, buddy.
All right, buddy. Thanks for coming on. You know, and it's funny, too. Like I said, I knew I was going to take a beating from both of you guys, but it wasn't as bad as I thought until we went up Murray and his broken ankle from last year.
Hey, your team plays dirty. They take out the players. You can't tell me that they don't get bonuses for taking out the best players that they're playing against.
And well, obviously with the New Orleans Saints, we had that whole issue this year with the bounty gate, you know, with the coaches offering $10,000 for an extra $10,000 for anyone who gets anyone they take out. But
you can't tell me that's not happening on every team.
Oh, of course. New Orleans is the only team that got caught. That's a given. That's a given.
That's because Sean Payton is a moron.
Well, yeah.
That man has... He is an absolute moron. He should not be a coach. I mean, he's got a great team, and he does not know how to use his assets properly. He is, moron. Just like, what is his name? The Jets coach.
Rex Ryan.
Yes, thank you. I couldn't think of the Rex. I remembered the Ryan. I mean, him and his brother, somebody needs to get them out of the NFL before they completely destroy it.
Well, yeah, they're both morons. I don't want to, like, I've met Rex, and he's a nice guy, and means well. He's confident. He's cocky. He's brash. Like he's a head coach. That's what he's supposed to be. They're supposed to be confident. He's not going to go around sitting there saying, "Yeah, I don't think our team has a chance." Of course, he's going to come around and say, "You know, we're going to go win the Super Bowl this year." And he looks like a ridiculous because he says it every single year. But you know, like you know, Jason Garrett, other coaches say, "You know, we're going to go out there and put our best foot forward, and you know, we're aiming to make the playoffs this year." That's the right answer. Don't say every single year. Don't say we're going to win the Super Bowl every single year because you just make yourself look like a moron. And that's what he does. The last few minutes of the show every single week, I'm going to give you your opportunity to have the floor. You can pick one thing about the sports industry or the sports world, a story that's going on, anything that you want, and you can rant for 2 minutes. We call it sound off. So, Sarah, before I go, you are free. The floor is yours.
Oh, geez. I didn't know I was going to be put on the spot like this. All right, 2 minutes. Let's see. Oh, I don't know what to talk about for 2 minutes. Jeez.
You can say whatever your little heart desires, with the exception of picking on me.
Nah, I won't pick on you. I don't know. I mean, it seems like most of the sports that we covered in our conversations today was hockey, football, and a little bit of baseball. There was no soccer discussed, and since soccer is my son's favorite sport and one of the only sports that I know really well, I guess I'll talk about issues that I've got with soccer nowadays. I mean, you've got the teams in the MLS over here in America that are trying to get better, but they end up not doing well enough. And then when you go over to like the Premier League over in Europe and you watch them play, it's like night and day. It makes the MLS soccer league look like a traveling soccer team for kids. I mean, you would think with all the money that they're making that these players would step it up and do better. I mean, like the last time I went to a Red Bull game over in Harrison, beautiful stadium, by the way, awesome food. It's just a phenomenal place. If you know, ever get a chance, if you're a soccer fan, definitely go to a Red Bull game. I mean, the last game was so slow. You know, usually professional sports, it's much more high-paced, more interesting, but it was so slow. I was floored. I couldn't believe how little they tried to move the ball, how much, or I should say, how little effort that they were putting in. I mean, we have, for my son's traveling soccer team here in Wayne, we have Red Bull's trainers come to teach the fundamentals. So I think what the Red Bull's professional team needs to do is have some of those Red Bull's trainers come in and reteach those guys the fundamentals. There's too many guys out there that are trying to do all these fancy tricks that can't pull it off. You know, you got to go back to your basics. I mean, that's for any sport, whether it's soccer, basketball, baseball, football, lacrosse, hockey, anything. You need to focus more on basics. And I think that you can take any team from any league, whatever it is, you take a team full of people that have huge hearts. They may not be the most talented player in the world, but you keep focusing them on their basics, they will come out on top every time. Every time. That's my point of view anyway. But, I mean, basics are so important. I wish there were coaches out there for kids' levels that would go and focus on the basics. Focus on the positions. Focus on passing for soccer. Focus on passing for basketball. You know, just drill the fundamentals. Don't focus so much on winning, 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 winning. Focus on learning. All right, that's my rant. I'm good.
That was great.
Did I meet my 2 minute quota?
Oh, you did three, but it was. I think the minute was well taken. Mine is a little bit more simple, and it's one that I was trying to do a couple weeks ago with Jose, but Jose sort of not only put a kibosh on it, but I think we both agreed it wasn't the right time or place. But earlier today, Peter Vesey, one of the greatest NBA writers of our time, was on with us. And it reminds me that today's society, today's sports fan, is so enamored by ESPN. Yes, ESPN has opened the doors for a lot of different things, a lot of different opportunities for a lot of different talented people. The other day I saw SportsCenter, we had two female hosts, which is such a breakthrough, hosting SportsCenter, which is, like I said, a major breakthrough. But there has to be a point where everything in this sports media community should not be based around ESPN. As that's one of the reasons why Back Sports Page is growing is the way it is. We focus on a different type of issues in the sports industry, not just about the major sports areas, but about the purity of the sport and showing a different side of not only the athletes but the sports in general. And it's one of the great reasons why there should be other alternatives besides ESPN. That's the most important thing in the sports industry, because remember, who are going to grow up and want to be better athletes and do different things and might be shied away because they see the results of these athletes on ESPN. Not to put a scare into anybody, but situations like Junior Seau a couple of months ago, he got so enamored by being Junior Seau, the football player, when his football career was over, he didn't know what to do because he had no one to tell him to be at practice at this time. And he ended up taking his own life away. There's different perspectives in different ways we should be perceiving these athletes, and I don't think ESPN does it in the right way. That's just my perspective on things. I don't know how you feel about it, but that's just how I feel.
Definitely. There's not enough emphasis on the outside view of things. It's too much emphasis on, ESPN saying, this game and this game this person, so-and-so, he's just not going to match up to this guy. You know, there's way too much focus on money, negativity. There's not enough positive spin being put on things. There's not enough emphasis on the outside world. It's too focused, too much of a pinpoint on winning. There's not enough of the charity stuff, NFL has the 60-minute play thing. I can't think of the name of it.
I know what you're talking about. The charity that they run every single year.
Yeah, where they have kids come out and play, you know, 60 minutes of football, you know. I mean, there's so many good things that these sports do outside of just they're being professional players on TV. There's so much out there beyond that, and there's too many networks that don't cover that. And I mean, as far as the Back Sports Page, it covers all aspects of it, which ESPN needs to start doing, covering more things. I mean, there's so much out there. NBC Sports needs to go and elaborate on what out there sports-wise. There's so much possibilities, and they just don't show it.
I think you just summed up, and you stole a little bit of my thunder, which I'm going to forgive you for. I'm going to ask you to pick a couple games. I'm not going to go through the whole schedule like I did with David, but you know, you're here, you're on the show with us, so you deserve to have your say in the games today. I'm just going to pick Jose and I picked, and we'll obviously add in the Dallas game. Jets-Pittsburgh.
I'm going to have to say Pittsburgh. My best friend Crystal's father is a huge Steelers fan. So.
Denver and Atlanta.
Denver.
Okay. 49ers-Detroit.
Oh, geez, that one I have no clue. You know what? We'll go with the Niners.
Okay. How about the Philadelphia Eagles and the Baltimore?
Definitely the Ravens. I want to watch them beat the snot out of the Eagles.
And I know where we're going to go with this, but the Giants and the Bucs.
Actually, I'd like to see the Buccaneers win.
Okay. And for you, the bonus game, obviously, will be Dallas-Seattle.
Oh, Cowboys all the way. They're going to cream Seattle.
Okay. Romo going back to the scene of the crime for the first time since the mishap in the playoff game.
Oh, yeah. I'm just hoping that he's not going to choke today. I'm hoping he'll play as well as he did last week. He did really well last week. I mean, he threw well. He made some good decisions. I mean, as long as he keeps his head in the game like he did then, I definitely think Romo is going to have a good game today.
And I do believe, I was seeing if the game was on national television for us. That's going to stink. But otherwise, you know, I think this was, with the rocky start with the technical problems, including when Peter was on, I thought this was a very good show. I think I might have to fire Jose. I think he might be hired.
I don't know if he'd be too thrilled with that one.
Well, you know, not for nothing. We've done 7 or 8 shows, and he's missed half of them. I still love the guy, but, you know, it is what it is, and I'm really glad. And this was this turned out to be a very, very, very and not only that, but I also think that you bring in such a perspective as a parent with the sports, with the kids growing up and playing sports. I think that, you know, that's not talked about enough, and the fundamentals of the games. And it's one of the reasons why I was looking forward to having you on today, because you bring such a valid point to it. So I do thank you for helping me out today, getting me out of a tough bind of, you know, all my lonesome. And I did apologize to Nick Singleton. Nick was supposed to come on to talk Yankees Tampa, ALDS. We just ran out of time. I knew when David was on the phone, we weren't going to get to him. So he'll probably be on with us sometime next week. Cool. Sarah, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Hopefully we'll have you back on with us again.
Sounds good to me.
And otherwise, the show is over. Everyone may go in peace.
Bye-bye.